Chapter 24. On Sunday, we ride together in Ron's car to Mike's house. Carefully, holding a crystal bowl of homemade tiramisu, I answer Ron's question about who will be at the dinner. Levi, which means Stormy, too. One or two of the better players, the Supes head coach, and both of the assistant coaches. And Coach Bobby will probably be there. He and Mr. Edwards have been good friends ever since Coach helped Levi, Mike, Stormy, and Travis over a shooting incident about 3 years ago.
Shooting incident? Donis, this is the type of stuff you're supposed to tell us about.
Jamie pinches the bridge of his nose. Travis was goofing off with a BB gun after hockey practice, I say. Levi, Stormy, and Mike were with him. A BB hit a minivan passing by, broke a window. Glass shattered all over the driver, a teammate's mom who ended up losing sight in one eye. The guys wouldn't say who had done it. Coach convinced them to tell the truth so the one who did it could accept responsibility. Travis came forward. He was shunned by everyone in town and didn't play on any team after that.
That's really important background information you should have mentioned sooner. Jamie says, anything else you've conveniently forgotten to relay? What do you know about Grant Edwards?
I bristle at Jamie's tone. You should have gotten Granny June or Minnie Mustang to be your informers. They know all the dirt.
You're helping to paint a picture of the town for us, Ron says.
You guys want a snitch? I bounce my legs so hard that the dessert on my lap wobbles. Dana Firekeeper's parents were killed by a drunk driver when she was little. She graduated from law school and was the first tribal member to be appointed as the judge at tribal court. Before her, all the judges were non-native or from other tribes. I turn to stare down Jamie, who sits in the back seat behind Ron. Mike's mom was Miss Michigan, and her talent was rhythmic gymnastics. Supposedly, she's from a big crime family downstate. Mike's dad was a super jock at Sioux High. He was offered full-ride athletic scholarships in two sports. He picked hockey over wrestling. Ron is on the receiving end of my next angry snitch glare. Stormy's mom got held for ransom when she owed too much to the big city drug dealers who came around when PERCAP started. His dad and his uncles cashed their checks and bailed her out. Gossip pours from me like a spigot on full blast. Granny June's been married 5 times, twice to the same guy and once to his brother. Jamie is subjected to my really angry snitch glare. That Labor Day bonfire Coach Bobby hosts each year? Did you notice any beer? No, because he wants to provide a safe and fun celebration for the players before school starts. He doesn't put up with any drinking or drug use. He used to drive me home after games so my mom wouldn't have to wait at the school parking lot in the cold. He defended me, and before me, Robin Bailey, when the other high school coaches didn't want us on the team. I stare forward, too worked up to look at either of them now. I know what you're here to do, but these are good people. Mrs. Edwards started a donation program at my grandmother's boutique, so girls who can't afford a dress for Shagala or prom can get one. During the last huge snowstorm, tribal police organized teams of snowmobilers to check on every elder and deliver meals. When the ferry gets iced in, the tribe offers rooms at the hotel for Sugar Island residents who are trapped on the mainland. I don't like the way you come into town, turn on a light, and expect to see cockroaches scurrying everywhere. It gnaws at me. The way they want bad stuff without knowing the good stuff, too. It's like, you haven't earned our stories, I say.
Fair point, Ron says.
Jamie is silent. Just stares at me for a beat before turning toward the window. If the community were an ill or injured person, the FBI would cut out the infection or reset the bones. Amputate if necessary. Problem solved. I'm the only person looking at the whole person. Not just the wound. Ron's navy sedan is out of place among the luxury cars parked in front of the glass and steel house. Jamie's eyebrows rise higher with each make and model we walk past. Sighing dramatically, I point to each vehicle. Dana's Mercedes, Levi's Hummer, Mike's Jaguar, and Coach Bobby's BMW. I catch Ron's expression mirroring Jamie's.
There's nothing sketchy about having nice cars, I say. They all have money except Coach Bobby, and he won his car in a poker tournament a few years ago. Mrs. Edwards greets us at the door. I hold out the dessert like a bomb, which she takes graciously. Jamie carries the bag with my new BlackBerry. When Ron contributes a bag of potato chips, I can't help but smile despite still being ticked off. He reminds me of a cousin who shows up to potlucks with a box of Jell-O. Dana gives me a quick hug on her way out. She always drops off a pan of lasagna for Sunday buffet. It's only been 6 months since I was last here at one of the Edwards' Sunday dinner buffets, watching our Sioux Blue Devils game videos on the giant wall-mounted plasma screen, analyzing each play and looking for ways to improve. Coach Bobby and Mr. Edwards reenacting moves like performance artists. The before was a lifetime ago. In the now of this newer new normal, I hold hands with Jamie on the sectional. The hockey game on the big screen isn't mine. I'm not here as a player, but as an anglerfish to my soup boyfriend. Looking around, I realize Jamie probably sees everyone as suspects. My brother and his friends, correction, my friends. Mike's parents, Coach Bobby, and sitting next to Levi, Coach Alberts, the soup's coach for the past 2 years. Some people were against hiring Coach Alberts because he's black. Maintaining our proud hockey heritage, which is just code for hockey is for rich Zaganash boys. My dad went through similar bullshit. Hockey might not give a rat's ass about skin color, but some of its fans certainly do. Mrs. Edwards tells everyone to fix a plate and sit at the dining table. She reminds me of Grand Mary. No one was surprised when Mike's mom bought the boutique. She had been the manager, and before that, its best client. Mrs. Edwards even resembles Grand Mary, slender, French bob hairstyle, impeccably dressed, and never without the requisite strand of pearls. I'd get mad when Grand Mary praised Mrs. Edwards in front of Mom. My grandmother valued timeless style and taking care of oneself. I remember visiting the boutique to try on dresses a few years ago and overhearing Grand Mary mention that I was at risk of outgrowing the sizes carried. Mom forbade her from ever speaking to me about my body, my weight, or anything about my appearance. Donis and I will leave town without a backwards glance if you ever cross that line. I'd never heard my mother use that tone. But Grand Mary must have heard it at least once before when Auntie first showed up at the big house to see three-month-old me, and Mom insisted to Grand Mary and Grandpa Lorenzo that I not be kept from my firekeeper family. I only wished for my mother to stand up for herself like that. When I see Mike head to the kitchen island where the buffet is set up, I make sure Jamie and I are right behind him. I plant myself next to Mike at the mahogany dining table, gleaming beneath a rectangular chandelier of 1,000 crystal icicles. We sit on uncomfortable, clear acrylic dining chairs. Floor-to-ceiling windows provide a spectacular view of the red, white, and blue lights of the International Bridge and the cityscape across the river. It feels like we're in a diorama or on a stage. Tonight, I'm expanding my usual role as Jamie's girlfriend to also play girl who is interested in everything Mike Edwards says. Shogala won't be the same without your grandmother, Call Me Grant says, his somber expression held for a respectful moment. It's the town's finest night, he tells Jamie and Ron. Dinner, dancing, and our women lovelier than ever. His eyes hold my own for an extra beat. I narrow my eyes. This must be how he gets juries to acquit his clients. Just the right attention to each one. Before the whole Call Me Grant nonsense, I never thought of him as anything other than Mike's dad. Now he's kind of a gross pervert. Don't you think it's silly? I keep my voice breezy. All that time and money spent on a fundraiser? Wouldn't it be easier if we donated what we spend on tickets and dresses and everyone just stayed home for the night? I smile sweetly. Call Me Grant laughs at my absurdity. Well, what's the fun in that? It's our best month at the store, Mrs. Edwards points out. It helps the team, Levi says. People are more loyal to something they're part of. Speaking of dresses,
Mrs. Edwards tells me. I went ahead and ordered something for you since Shagala is coming up in 2 weeks. I hope you'll trust me. She turns to Mike. Macy's dress came in and she's already done her fitting. I'll order her corsage for you. I sit up straight. You're going with Macy? I ask Mike, trying to hide my irritation. Macy Manitou is like a UTI, flaring up at the worst times. Levi answers for him. She's in between guys, and Mike needed a date. Me and Stormy are going with some twins from St. Ignace. Carla and Casey or Colleen or something. I'm sure they're honored by your enthusiasm, I say. Levi grins. I might be the only person in the world who gets away with teasing him. The conversation moves on as Coach Bobby boasts about a girl from across the river who made Canada's national women's team. I'm not surprised. She's the best center forward I've ever played against. It's not too late, Coach Bobby tells me in a wistful, sing-song voice. He explains to Jamie, Donis could establish dual citizenship and be eligible to play for either country's national team. I tense under the sudden spotlight. It still hurts. Becoming a doctor wasn't my only dream. Medicine and hockey. Playing for a national women's team was a long-time goal. Coach doesn't know that that dream crashed and burned a year ago. Auntie is the only one left who knows what I did. 2 summers in a row now, I've made a huge decision that changed me. She should be playing D1 and getting ready for Torino, Coach Bobby says in a scolding manner, referring to the next Winter Olympics. No, I get it, Levi cuts in. Family's here. Leaving's hard. I'm glad you stuck around, Donis. He nods at Jamie. But you are, too. Yes. Jamie gazes into my eyes as if I'm the only person in this suddenly too hot room. My stomach somersaults at the sincerity in his voice. I pinch my thigh under the table to snap out of the dreamy moment. For an instant, I forgot that Jamie is acting a part. I change the subject. So, what do we think will happen with the lockout? Any mention of the NHL lockout is like tossing chum to sharks. Coach Alberts and Call Me Grant predict the lockout will shut down the entire season. Levi and the guys take Coach Bobby's side, that it won't come to that. Ron is Switzerland, declaring his neutrality. At one point, as Jamie and I are gleefully joining in, I realize that Ron is quietly observing us. As the debate dies down, I tell a few stories about Mike's best saves. Remember the time he spiked the puck? It was coming in high and I imitate a perfect volleyball smash. And when he fell on his back but still blocked the puck with his leg? Mike's parents beam at their son, who has turned beet red. All right, that's enough. Come on, Donnie defense. Let's set up your new phone, Mike says to shut me up. Secret squirrel time. I follow Mike as he grabs a bag with my phone. We're going to keep telling stories about you, Levi shouts as we go downstairs. My plan is to leave something in his bedroom, so I have an excuse to return a few minutes later. Call Me Grant's home office is next to Mike's basement lair. My heart races at the thought of seeing the office furniture that used to be Grandpa Lorenzo's. When Grandmary sold the business and the building downtown to Mrs. Edwards, she included the furniture from my grandfather's office on the second floor. I imagine my feet are as heavy as uranium to avoid breaking into a smoke dance. Tiny staccato steps as quick as a hummingbird's wings. I've been in Mike's bedroom before, on Sunday evenings when there was a line for the main bathroom. There is a Jack and Jill bathroom between his bedroom and his dad's office. It was easy to forget about because you couldn't access it from the family room. Mike's bedroom cracks me up, especially the shrine to Gordie Howe. A number 9 jersey is mounted in a huge shadow box on the wall, hanging above a fancy table with a lit candle burning in front of a framed autograph photo of the Red Wings legend. I spy the latest iMac computer on Mike's desk, a king-sized bed with a poster above the headboard, the 2002 Red Wings team posing with the Stanley Cup.
bookcases lining an entire wall filled with hockey trophies, many books, and assorted Red Wings memorabilia. We sit on the edge of his bed, and I pull out the BlackBerry. Mike coaches me through each step. Although I like the way the BlackBerry feels in my hand, I make a show of grumbling so he'll feel needed. Why is it called a BlackBerry if it's blue? And rolling the sideball thingy feels weird, I whine, thumbing the small tracking knob on the device. Mike looks at me and we both giggle childishly. When he finishes his BlackBerry tutorial, I let my old phone slip through my fingers at the far side of the bed. The thick carpet muffles its fall. We return upstairs. Coach Bobby and Call Me Grant reenact plays from last night's game. They're the same height and build, and with their jeans and Red Wings t-shirts, they look like twins. While everyone watches their performance, I seize the opportunity to go downstairs and search for my old phone. I rush through Mike's room to the bathroom. My actions sync with the plan I make up as I go. Lock Mike's bathroom door, turn on the light and noisy exhaust fan, try the doorknob to Call Me Grant's home office, exhale a sigh of relief when it opens. I'm in. Operation Secret Squirrel. 1. Eyeball the room layout using only the light from the bathroom. 2. Grab the Red Wings throw blanket on the love seat and fold it against the bottom of the door to the family room. 3. Turn on the overhead light. My breath catches at the sight of the office furniture. Desk, credenza, and matching bookcases. The deep purplish-brown rosewood has simple lines, unlike the ornate, hand-carved mahogany furniture of Grandpa Lorenzo's library at the big house. I run my fingertips along the desktop. The pre-cry sting inside my nose is like someone holding a bottle of ammonium carbonate smelling salts to jostle me back to alertness. Come on, sis, you're burning daylight. 4. Remove a small digital camera from my sports bra to snap pictures of each bookcase shelf to document the contents. Books that might include an interesting title, perhaps chemistry-related, and framed photographs of Mike's dad at hockey events that might place him at locations that align with drug activity in the Great Lakes area or show his contact with someone the FBI considers to be a suspect. Whenever Auntie tucks her cell phone in her lipstick in her bra, she calls it her niche purse or the high pocket. My high pocket is a shallow space barely able to fit the camera without creating a plateau-like uniboob. 5. Check the file drawers in the credenza to photograph the label on each file folder. Locked. Minor obstacle. No worries. I have a backup plan. 6. Pull the top right drawer of the desk all the way out to reach the key that should be on the tiny hook in the back. It's not there. Major obstacle. Mouthing silent curses, I look around for any ideas for a backup plan for my backup plan. What I see makes my heart thud instead. My footsteps, recorded in the plush ivory carpet like a trail through snow. Uncle David's voice urges me. Think through the problem, Donis. Identify your need, assess your resources, develop a plan, sequence your steps. Steps. Footsteps are my problem. But I have no resources. Only trophies, framed awards, and books. Loads of books. Books. I rush to the bookcase and pull out an art book that looks to be the same length as the width of the vacuum. Gripping the spine, I drag the edge of the art book to retrace the vacuum marks. The result is not exact, but it's close enough. I turn off the light and return the throw to the love seat. Working my way backward to the bathroom, I feel sweat trickle from my forehead along my face and down my neck. Back in the bathroom, I hide the art book in the vanity cabinet. The girl in the mirror takes deep breaths. I stare at her, this girl who feels separate from me. I blink until I am back to myself again. I flush the toilet, wash my hands, and splash cold water on my face. The last step in my sequence is to spray air freshener, as if I've just taken the biggest dump of my life. I open the bathroom and jump back in alarm. Mike, standing in front of me, half smirking, blue-gray eyes twinkling. It's no use, Donis. I know what you're up to.
Mike says.